Hello and welcome to The Talkies, a weekly film podcast with me, Michael Henry.
And me, Lucy Smith.
This week we'll be discussing horror. Or I guess specifically fear. I kind of feel like we should split up horror into some categories like gore and... Because this one feels very much fear-related and in some ways like childhood...
Thriller?
Teenage fears. No, thriller I'd say would be more action-based or... Silence of the Lambs. I don't know, there's a distinction between horror and thriller that I think is... Mm. It's a fine line, but thriller's more suspense, whereas horror's more...
The
nasty.
Others, then, could be thriller, couldn't it?
In some ways, yeah. I think because it's, in many ways, like, ethereal and kind of gothic ghost sort of feel, it's more horror. I don't know, it's a fine distinction. Yeah. I'm not sure if I...
And psychological horror, too. Is another one. So,
yeah.
Speaking of the opposite of all that, do you want to start with your film, maybe?
Yeah, so for anyone who's seen the images that we attached maybe the day before or even today, I haven't picked my film out of anything. It's not a good film. Let's just get that out of the way. It's a very mediocre film at best. But it's a spoof of horror. And the reason I picked it, so my pick is Dracula Dead and Loving It. It's a spoof with Leslie Nielsen from the mid to late 90s. And the reason I picked it is because it scared the shit out of me, despite being not particularly scary at all. I think you had the same experience. You watched it and probably couldn't figure out why it was scary at all, but then...
It scared you when you were a kid, or now as well?
No, it didn't scare me now, not at all.
Okay.
It's a bad film. It's a bad film that isn't scary. I think the thing that struck me... So I watched this when I was maybe... I want to say 5 or 6 in the cinema, and it was rated PG, so we thought we were fine. And
little did
they. And obviously, it's about Dracula. I'm not going to explain the story. Everyone kind of knows this, you know, the vampire myth of Dracula in Transylvania. And... Yeah, it was relatively funny. There's a lot of slapstick in there. I should point out it's the same director of Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks, who's got 2 mentions now. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. And then it gets to a point
next.
It's about halfway through the film where, I don't want to say the love interest, but someone that Dracula's bitten is coming back to life as a vampire, and she bites someone. And I remember being in the cinema, and it really scared me. Like, it really shook me, and I was terrified, and for months afterwards I would wake up at like 5 in the morning and like have to tuck up under my duvet and like make sure my, like, it's such a weird thing. I would cover my feet and my hands and be in like a little cocoon in my duvet and close my eyes and think that would make me safe. But it really shook me. It genuinely scared me. And the weird thing is, revisiting it, the really distinct image I had in my mind where she's just bitten him and her fangs are out and there's blood in her teeth, it didn't look the way I remembered it. Obviously, being scared of it, I didn't revisit it. And now that I've revisited it, it's closing a door on a childhood trauma. It wasn't remotely scary. Obviously, it was. I don't think it's intended to be, but it really had a profound effect on me.
I think that says something for fear in general. Like, look again, and what you thought it was, like, it's just normalized.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends, like... So another film that scared the shit out of me when I saw it as a kid was Jurassic Park. Like, the opening of Jurassic Park, it was the first time I'd ever been in a cinema and wanted to leave because I was so uncomfortable or scared. So I would have been, again, similar age, maybe 5 or 6, and it's the sound of this thing that you hear, there's something in this cage. You don't know what it is. It was really scary. But, yeah, obviously, revisiting it, it becomes like a favourite. Jurassic Park's one of the most rewatched films of my life, I would say. And it doesn't scare me at all now. But I think, yeah, there's something in that. I don't know if it's true of everything. I imagine if someone has a phobia of spiders, they probably won't want to rewatch Arachnophobia over and over again.
Hmm.
And some things that are genuinely disquieting, like the end of Blair Witch was another one that stuck. I remember watching the VHS when I was like 11 or 12, and it really stuck with me, the ending. And... yeah, revisiting that, I still get a similar chill. Although I'm a bit more aware of how they achieved it. Achieved it all now,
I guess,
so it's not scary.
Created moments in film, that makes sense. But I guess in terms of, like, you're scared of a bug, look really closely at the bug. Maybe it'll help. I don't know. Like, or learn more about it.
Well, I've got a question that I'll save till a little bit later about, you know, how we approach fear or how we become less scared. But I don't know. It's a weird, like, it's strange that despite how much this film scared me and the idea of vampires especially, I still revisited loads of horror films from that point. And I would consciously try and seek out, like, graphic novels and films and TV shows that made me scared. And what I used to do, I used to tape from the Sci-Fi Channel or, like, late night Channel 4 and get up really early before my family are awake at, like, 5 or 6 in the morning. And I would watch loads of films from the 90s and the 80s, like slasher films and films like Blade and you know, all stuff that I shouldn't be watching when I was, like, 13.
Sounds like the making of a psychopath.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm surprisingly well-adjusted. But the thing that's strange is that nothing really scares me anymore. And I think it's because I put myself through that intentionally. And I don't even really like horror as much anymore because I burnt out on watching so many of them.
I think that's a shame.
Well, occasionally I will enjoy one, but I don't think they're that good anymore. I don't think, we've talked about this before in the Dream episode, I think, that I think most modern films don't capture the same kind of fear as definitely the film you've picked this week, but a lot of the ones, Dracula Dead and Loving It, but like The Blair Witch and stuff like that, where it's kind of suggested rather than...
Yeah, got to be
I think seeing anything like a monster or any sort of... thing that's supposed to be scary just kills it. Your imagination is arguably more terrifying when it comes to anything fear related.
I think what interested me about your pick, I wasn't interested for a long time, and I'm really glad they switched from the main character after a while because I hate him with a passion.
Yeah, he's pretty bad.
He's disgustingly bleh. Anyways, yeah. But what is interesting to think about is why we decide to put comedy onto horror and why we decide to make something more dealable. And I think comedy is a big way of dealing with horrible things. And yeah, there is a lot of like horror spoofs and stuff. And in that way, I think that might help people to deal with horror films. Or it also might have the effect of making horror films not scary anymore because there's too much of this play on it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was going to say, like, why do you think... Like, what do you think people's obsession with fear and horror is? Because you've said before you like the feeling of... You like going into a film and getting the adrenaline rush, even though it's kind of in a safe environment. Like, what do you think the draw is?
It's escape from your normal routine. Like, humans have become very... Well, humans in, like, cities and stuff and, like, places where it's all built up. You know, you're used to duvets and cushions. And I feel like I'm... sounding like Tyler Durden from Fight Club now.
it's comfort.
It's very cushy, yeah. And I think there's still something in us that wants to... That's why we dream about, like, tigers eating us or whatever. Well, I do anyway. And, like, yeah, you want some of that adrenaline and to feel alive in that way, I guess. But your life at risk.
Yeah, the whole predator-prey thing is still deeply ingrained in everyone, I think. But the reality is that... You know, 99% of us are generally fine throughout our lives, that we kind of steer clear of danger. We do everything to feel safe. I think
letting go a bit as well. That's why I like roller coasters and weird rides like that.
Yeah.
Just force you to lose control a little bit.
I think the people who can't lose the control or accept are the ones who are the most scared by things or the most anxious in day-to-day life. If you can't just accept, then you're probably trying to gain control of the situation. That just can't help.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know the one thing that I did find scary, and it happened in both of our films, illustrations at the start, like really old illustrations of monsters. Yeah.
The opening images, there's a very specific sort of hand-drawn, I want to say like 1400s almost, like really...
It's the kind you'd find in like old books in Buffy or whatever, like... old demons, and you've got to use your imagination to sort of bring them to life. That was the scariest bit of your pick, I think.
Yeah, well, it's probably the only one.
Yeah.
I remember when I put the film on this week, I was like, oh, okay, maybe this has got something to it. Watching those images at the start, thinking, yeah, there's something about the Gothic that is kind of unnerving. Mm. And then, yeah, it just wasn't. It just wasn't remotely scary. Yeah, it wasn't even wasn't funny, scary. To be fair,
yeah, exactly.
As well.
Exactly. Wasn't That's funny. What,
which is why I feel
down.
Bad for bringing it up, but as a pick, but it really is one of the few films that's ever genuinely scared me.
I'm glad you picked it. But yeah, in terms of like the funny factor, I wrote down the two places where I laughed, and one
can
was
I guess
about...
what they are?
Yeah, go on.
Is one the blood gag?
No.
Oh, okay. Is one of them?
This could go on for a while.
Yeah. Go on. No, just.
my one is before it got old. It got old quickly, but the guy who's obsessed with giving people enemas, I laughed at those lines, and then. Yep. The guy's reaction to garlic when the vampire comes into the room and it's everywhere and he sort of flails about. And that was it.
Yeah. I would say, consider it's the same director as Blazing Saddles, 90% of the jokes don't land. They're really over the top. They're just... And even the production design is really... The production
value is
really shoddy.
He must have known it wasn't
shoddy.
His best.
Yeah, it's probably one of his worst, I'd say. Although I would say, I do stand by the bit where they're hammering the stake and I think it's Van Helsing's like hiding around the corner. It holds on a wide shot for like 3 minutes and just keeps hitting him and getting covered in blood. That tickled me. But yeah, the film's not great. We don't recommend it. But yeah, I think that there are, like, for a PG, it there was a lot more nudity in it, or it suggested nudity and like haunting images.
Yeah, it was weirdly very sexual. And like some of the jokes are like women grinding on stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that might be what tormented me.
PG well, I
genuinely did start to question like why it scared me, and I think it's to do with all the body elements. So there's a scene where someone gets asked to hold a brain, and there's just loads of people. Like there is a lot of the physical, like pictures of anatomy and just human body horror. I know it's not like an 18 or anything, but I think that may have been my first introduction to thinking about what's beneath the skin and what goes on in your body and stuff. And I don't know if I've misremembered it, but I think I probably felt quite faint with the surgical bits, like I say, the brain, when I was a kid.
That's fair.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just unpacking it and adding my own.
No, I felt a tiny bit sick, like cracking at the skull and stuff. That's gross.
Yeah. Which again, for a PG is quite, it's effective in an unnatural way or unplanned way, maybe. Yeah. They probably didn't plan for the opening images to be sort of uncanny or scary, but they ended up being that. And I think tying in with, the body horror and that kind of thing, I think that's kind of what horror is kind of our, most things, and definitely this is probably a great way to introduce your pick, it's the fear of the unknown and very closely linked to death that not a lot of people think about it or talk about it, that it's the kind of great unknown. If you think of every horror film you've ever watched, the threat of death is probably the most prominent thing, and the ones that genuinely still make me uncomfortable, like The Shining, not in like a scared way, but like just a bit uncomfortable, you can't really say why.
Well,
it's because they can't explain something.
We were talking about in terms of The Shining and the others being the same, is this sort of idea of family dynamics too, like the people you should trust, everything going wrong with that's what like sticks in my brain, I think.
Yeah. Well, do you want to introduce your pick now, because that's a great way in?
So my pick is The Others, and I've been watching this since I was very little, and it's always scared the shit out of me. I'm going to be very careful not to give spoilers, because...
Yeah, there's quite a big spoiler that shouldn't be spoiled.
It's a big part of the film. Basically, let's just say there's twists. There's a couple of twists as it goes on. Although what I will say is, rewatching it as well, even when you know the twist, it is just as scary. They've got this
I think it adds something to it as well.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely does. You see how clever they were with it. The basic premise is it's sort of... They're on the Channel Islands in this mansion. It's this mum and her son and her daughter, and it's post-World War II, and they're alone, and they hire some servants, and basically the whole idea is something's going on in the house, and you're never sure what, they're never sure what. We assume ghosts, but we don't know, and they do things like take the curtains down when her little kids are so sensitive to light that they could die. You know, whoever the intruders are sort of like messing with their lives, and it's very silent throughout. There's a lot of just like bland colours and like very like tense, slow moments, and it just, yeah, it gets you from the start.
Oh, can I ask, when did you watch this for the first time? Like, how old were you?
Can't remember, so it must have been really young.
Was it around the time it came out, or was it like a few years later?
When did it come out? I never know.
I think it came out 2001.
My own film facts. 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have been watching it from then. Yeah.
Because I think I saw it in the cinema when I was about 12, maybe, or 13. And we were talking about this before we started recording, that I don't think I'd watched it again since the first time, because it was genuinely scary, especially when you're like a young teenager. I think we both picked kind of gothic. I know mine's not very good, but we both kind of picked gothic, almost like ghost or living dead type films.
Yeah. Mine is a ghost story, basically. It's just not your
conventional... There's a lot of paranormal activities in there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Do you think you gravitate towards this kind of horror film where it's more atmosphere and suggestion rather than jump scares and gore and that kind of thing?
That's the only one I'd watch more than once, I think, yeah. I've watched a lot of jump scare ones in my time. Me and my housemates in Belfast used to watch everyone that came out for the fun, for the adrenaline, but I can't remember any of the plots, and
they're very
forgettable,
aren't
they? Again. Yeah, yeah.
But there's no jump scare that's so good that you want to go back and revisit it. It's kind of, once it's done, whereas...
I love the kind of horror film where you remember a look between people, like the look between the mum and the daughter. They share them so much throughout the film, and it's just scary. And like, yeah, it reminds me...
Sorry, go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say something that I would consider a horror that I loved, which I don't watch a lot because it's horrible. We Need to Talk About Kevin, and it's the looks in that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I can close my eyes and picture their faces. That's horror for me.
I think that we might have to do an episode based on whatever that kind of horror is, because
I call psychological horror.
Yeah, where it's not really gory, this suggestion of violence, but I think that's the kind of stuff I gravitate towards these days. Something that unsettles me. Mm. Not every film, obviously, but if I'm going to pick something that's considered horror or like that, where it's unsettling because you're plunged into the unknown, and it's like stuff that people don't really talk about that goes on in the world.
Yeah.
There's something really discomforting and
finds its own place in your brain. Yeah,
because they're not scary in the traditional sense, should we say. Like, no, there's no jump scares, there's no like suspense building. It's just, no, here's a horrible thing that goes on in the world. I think that's why I like David Lynch films so much. Like, the first time watching Eraserhead or Mulholland Drive can be really disturbing, because you don't know what the rules are of that world. You don't know what's going to happen at any point. It's just kind of icky. And the same with like Gaspar Noé. He made Irreversible and Enter the Void and Climax. They're all films which, they're not jump scares. There's no jump scares or anything, but you feel kind of sick throughout all of them because they're so squirm inducing.
Yeah, I would say that The Others does have jump scares though, but they do it in the best way I've ever seen, in that the lead up to a jump scare will be a good 20 minutes because there's so much like silence and tension. But it's never boring. It's rewatching it, I've realised how beautiful it is, like the way they frame the shots and the light, the lighting. And
The use of light and dark is amazing in this. And I think the reason it's still kind of creepy is they hold in wide shots a lot. So when she's walking around the room and there's loads of things covered in sheets, they don't cut. Mm. And I think that's what's lost in a lot of horror films these days, is there's no suspense building, because whenever you cut, you feel like you're safe for a little bit. But her looking around a room and not really sure what she's going to find, but hearing noises.
You're right.
The power of suggestion through sound is scarier.
There's comfort in the camera cutting to whose reaction we want from that moment. And we're going, oh, good, they're scared. Right, let's keep watching. But like,
yeah, it's like a release, isn't it?
Yeah, whoever they choose to watch, like there's a bit where she's rounding her daughter. She sees her daughter's hand is slightly different. She's rounding the corner to see what her daughter's going to look like. It, like, just the way they choose to do that. Just, oh, yeah, I'm shivering now. It's just really good.
I'll be honest, rewatching that bit, I didn't find that as uncomfortable as the first time I watched it.
Oh, it terrified me as a kid, but yeah, now I don't find it quite as uncomfortable, yeah.
I could see why it would be. It's similar to like Mulholland Drive, the thing behind the diner. It's just the look of it is a bit unnatural, but Yeah, and I think similar. I don't think you've seen Hereditary yet, but there's a bit in that where I think hearing an adult with the voice of a child is just kind of creepy anyway. That's something unnatural about it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Now watching that moment with the mum and the daughter, the mum's reaction to it is the scariest bit. That's what's changed as I've grown up.
Like, yeah, definitely.
People's reactions to horror.
I think what's probably the commonality for how we felt when we first watched it was we probably related more to the children when we first watched it. Because I think the rating for this is 12. It's quite low, and I think that's why it's genuinely unsettling. It's because younger people do tend to watch it. And then now maybe you probably, not that you've got kids or anything, but I think you probably relate more to her experience. Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything and say maybe you shouldn't relate to her experience, but I think that's what I took away. I remember distinctly there's something to do with the curtains at night with the two kids in bed.
Mm.
That's still quite scary, but a lot of the bits that stuck with me more this time was her unraveling, her kind of feeling like she's going insane and
Her confusion. Yeah,
I don't know. The adult experience.
Just when you said that bit about the curtains at night, I got shivers again. Like the idea of growing up with my brother, I guess, and like in the dark, him saying there's something there, and I'm going, shut up. And he eventually like touches my face or something and I start screaming. Yeah, that's, there's nothing quite like that.
I remember, I honestly think our own brains are what is worse than seeing anything in a film. That I remember being at like sleepovers and describing to friends saying, because there was like a building site over the back of one of my friend's houses. And I said, right now I can picture someone sat in that JCB. And I know it's not real because I'm telling you, I'm imagining it. But I'm still scared. Like I could scare the shit out of myself. Mm. And I think it's true. Like thinking you see something when it's not there, that kind of thing. It's entirely our own brains. It's never actually something in the room, obviously.
Yeah, I think I'm quite a good... I think you and me probably both could watch a horror film and sleep quite easily. But I know people my age, older than me, that would still like be like, OK, I'm going to imagine someone in the house for the rest of the night now. That's why they don't watch it, because it upsets your whole life like for that night. Yeah.
I remember the feeling, but I haven't had a prolonged 2 or 3 hours or a night where I've been like, I can't sleep.
Maybe they just need to watch more horror films.
Well, yeah, I think that could be the case. I think the more you're exposed to these things, the less scared you are generally, from my own experience. But I think it's similar with just in general, that the more you've experienced in life, or the more you've watched. So a good example would be the documentary pick from a few weeks ago, that it didn't make me feel sick, but you had a really strong physical reaction. I think maybe because I've watched more uncomfortable and disturbing things that maybe I'm not as affected by it.
That's interesting though, because I know what you mean, but I think those sort of things should always make us want to throw up, like genocide and shit.
It wasn't like I was smiling all the way through, but I mean, I can still empathize, but I'm not desensitized to the point where
I don't get in some ways. It allows you to watch and analyze better, maybe. But actually, maybe the people who do get frightened by horrors and stay up all night are the lucky ones, because that's what the reaction should be. That's living. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just completely numb.
Well, you have watched a lot of films. I think that's the consequence.
Yeah. But then I think the flip side of that is when I can start to appreciate how well made something is. Like Ari Aster, who made Hereditary and then Midsommar.
Based off that sort of stuff. Because as you said, it's good to have watched films and know what's good and then appreciate a good one. But do you reckon, because it feels like it could be a good thing to make a film intending it for someone who's never watched a film before?
What's the question?
Like, would you agree that approaching filmmaking as in you want to make something for someone who's never watched a film before, for them to go, wow, like...
So do I think it's easier?
Do you think that's how it should be approached? To not think of, you know, all the clever stuff and the history that's gone before, but really just make something that's going to make someone who's not watched any other films appreciate it just as much.
But I think as the filmmaker, you would have had to have watched those things to know what is scary. And I generally would veer more towards watch as many things and learn as many things from history to not only just not repeat the past, but learn what is effective. Because I think what you're saying is, like, would it be preferable for me to have an audience member who's ignorant to sort of tropes in order for me to make them feel the way I would like them to?
Not quite.
Okay.
I mean, maybe
I don't understand the question then.
Yeah, I'm not quite phrasing it right. Like, I do get you, and I think, yeah, it's probably best to know what's come before and do it like that. But, like, to just give someone an experience for pure experience sake rather than use any of the stuff you already know works on them. But I guess that's what everyone's trying to do when they want to make their own voice and own stamp on stuff, isn't it? So,
yeah, I think it gets harder, definitely, because there is so much content. And, like, I know students who say they're obsessed with horror, and then I suggest some of the best films ever made, and they watch it like, yeah, it was all right. I'm like, what? How do you think Conjuring 3 is better than The Shining?
It's not their jam.
How do you think? Yeah, well, I think the problem is that culturally we want things faster and more. Like, if people pay for a comedy, they expect to just laugh and feel good. If they want a horror, it's like, no, I need to jump in my seat. I don't think that's fair. I think there's a lot of great... Midsommar is not a jump scare film. It is not particularly... I mean, it's kind of gory in places. It's not a traditional horror, but I remember watching that in the cinema and just feeling really uncomfortable for two hours and a bit. And that's why it was successful to me, because I was like, oh, you've made me feel uncomfortable and question a lot of things. And it was just a really beautiful film too. But yeah, I didn't go in like, why wasn't you didn't scare me enough? I want my money back. I think that's the problem, is that people are washed with too much content these days. So it probably is harder to be funny or scary.
The thing with the jump scare films as well is, we used to do it in Belfast, like, you go in going, I'm not going to be scared. And, like, people actively try not to be scared to show off and therefore, like, miss the whole point of the film. Although most of these films, there is no point, so it doesn't really matter that you've missed it. But
one thing I want to ask is, I think, especially over the past, like, 15 years or so, because the internet means you can, if you want, you can access really nasty videos of, like, beheadings and stuff. I don't know what my point is here. I was basically going to say, do you think reality is actually scarier than horror? Because that's generally what I feel. I feel like documentaries are the only place that actually shock me anymore.
Yeah, of course reality is scarier than stories. That's why I don't listen to the news.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, it's scarier to think what's around the corner.
And there's no control. Like, well, unless there are little things you can do from your home as you... But, like, politicians doing stuff, like, there's no control over that. So I just don't scare myself with it. I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one. Do you think reality is scary?
Yeah, I think... I mean, this week alone is the only week where I've kind of had a sigh of relief for a while. But I feel... I don't know why, but particularly over the past couple of years, I've had a almost daily feeling of dread about the future of the planet. Because... And not enough is being done, frankly, about climate change.
Yeah, and, I guess the thing is, all those apocalypse horror movies that we've watched, like, they are nowhere near as scary as it actually happening to us.
Well, I think what the reality of, like, real life horror is that it's not quite in the dark, creep up on you kind of thing. I mean, that you know, obviously that probably does happen in very rare instances, but the truth is. It's that creeping dread. That's why I like The Shining so much, is that it does capture a feeling of... Only one person dies on screen in that film, and it's over very quickly, but the whole feel of that thing is time and, just history and... Yeah, I think that's when a film is effective as a horror, for me, is when you can make me question the bigger picture and... That's why I want to, before we wrap up, I want to bring up the film Martyrs, which, if we do an episode on gore, will be the film I pick. But that the ending of that film is one of the most profound endings to a film. It's smarter than the film should be as a horror. That it brings up huge questions that instill so much dread within people. That's why I think it was effective. That could be a complete rant there if I carry on.
I guess the thing is with films versus reality is, like, reality will never be a very tight narrative that is only horror. And that's kind of what you need for the horror genre. Like, maybe a certain amount of time in your day could be that amount of horror. But, like, you know, a prolonged version of, you know, your town flooding or, you know, viruses and stuff. It's always going to be mixed in with little lovely moments and laughter and, like, I don't know. It's not all going to be a tense fest and it's going to be a very long, drawn-out thing. It's going to be, like, life, basically.
Well, yeah, we're basically living through, in a weird way, a quiet apocalypse where it isn't this immediate, like, oh, God, this thing is outside, defend it. It's just a slow, creeping mist. That's probably the best way to describe it. Like, there's a mist around that you know is not safe.
Did you ever watch The Fog?
Yes.
That's a good one. That's also a childhood one.
It didn't scare me, I'll be honest. I think I watched it too late in life. But...
I watched it all the time when I was little, probably before the others, and that was terrifying. Mum and Dad used to tease me, like, don't go into the fog.
Have you seen the remake? I don't know if it's a remake of The Fog, but it's the Stephen King one. I think it's The Mist.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's got such a bleak ending, but it's one of the best endings to a horror film because it's so hopeless. I feel like you want a gut punch from a horror film. You want to feel nasty, and that one did it very well. And it captured the same kind of paranoia we're talking about, where it's like there's this mist outside the shopping centre and they don't know what's out there and they try and stay safe and then...
I don't know. Even with a horror, I don't want hopeless. Like The Others... I'm not going to spoil anything about the way it ends, but even that's got a little bit of weird, twisted hope to it.
Yeah, in a way. I don't know, it's pretty bleak. It's a pretty bleak film when you think about it, but when you think about what has happened rather than what is happening, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. Yeah, it's personal preference, though, I guess. Like, same with when we talked about romance, that perhaps whether you're an optimist or a pessimist will determine how you feel about it. That maybe... You know, for me, a horror should make me feel bad because, you know, like if you're feeling good in a horror, then what? I don't know. I don't think you're seeking out.
You can feel good at the end, like The Shining.
I don't feel good at the end of The Shining.
I know there's the picture bit, but at least the sun is not dead. I don't know.
Yeah, there's some hope before the very end, I guess. But nah, The Shining. Makes me very uncomfortable.
I'm going to rewatch that soon. I loved that.
I watched it on Halloween. I love it so much. Like, it's like, this is where, like, for me, it's the best horror ever made, but it's not the scariest. I think that's the problem, is that when people hear best horror, they think I'm going to be scared from start to finish. It's just,
I think
it makes
scary
you uncomfortable.
Is subjective, though, because so much of The Shining does make me scared. The bathtub bit, the doorknobs, the corridors, like, all that scares me when it doesn't scare you. So, yeah, no.
So I want to ask... Like,
got to judge it on something else, I guess.
Did your film instill recurring... So any fears you have now, do you think they're relative to the fears instilled in this film? Or have you just grown out of it?
I think sometimes in my writing comes out with, still trying to give no spoilers, what parents could do to their kids. Like, that has come out in certain bits of writing, and I think it does still scare me, yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
No.
No.
not this pick, but yeah, other horror films, I think. Yeah, like the being out of control, and I don't really, yeah, the thing is, I'm not actually scared of anything. Like, I'm one of the few people that I know anyway who openly says, I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of not being able to achieve what I want to before I die. That's the
not
only
in
fear.
Like a horror kind of way, though, is it?
No,
you don't scream,
that's what I mean.
At
like,
the thought.
Nothing scares me in that way anymore. Like, as a kid, scared of the dark, scared of everything. I think people are the only thing that's genuinely still scary. Like, not knowing what a person is capable of.
Again, the unknown, I guess.
Yeah, the unknown in that way. But generally, I'm at peace with things enough, I think, to not be scared.
Scared.
Thank you for listening to The Talkies. This week's episode was Fear. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. And remember to tune in for next week's episode.